You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 70 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Talking Props. Talking Props is a punk band from Santiago, Chile. Heavily influenced by 90s punk, the five-piece band have just put out a five-song EP entitled The Void. To check out more about the band Talking Props, you can check them out on Facebook and Instagram at Talking Props CL, and make sure to check them out on Spotify. Now here it is, their new single, The Void.
This is Grant from Delta Ray, and you are listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the gold, 'cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. So get back in the bank, 'cause tomorrow we'll do it, we'll do it all.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, what's going on? As always, this is Chris Swinney, your host for That One Time on Tour. This is my podcast where I get to sit down with somebody in or around the entertainment industry and have a great conversation. I'm a little under the weather today. I think I'm coming down with some kind of cold or something, so I'm not my normal crazy self, and I'm a little wheezy here and there, But I had to get this done. I wanted to get this done early because I have a lot going on this week. So hopefully you're hearing this early. Normally the podcast comes out on Wednesday, but hopefully this is coming out a day or two before that. But last week was great. Thank you so much for checking out my episode with Scott Radinsky from Poli. He was also a relief pitcher in Major League Baseball. Scott was an awesome guy. If you have not checked that out, listen to this episode and then go back and check it out. And we have so many awesome episodes. Go to our back catalog and check it out. This is number 70. 7-0. That is crazy that we've done 70 of these episodes. This week on the show, I got to sit down with bass player for the gothic, southern rock, country, whatever you want to call it, band Delta Ray. I got to sit down with their bass player, Grant Emerson. We had a great conversation. We spanned so many topics in this conversation. This show does go on tangents quite a bit, and we tackled that. But we also talked about their new crowdfunded, awesome new record that's coming out. They had the fifth most pledged fundraiser like ever in the history of Kickstarter. So there's a lot of good stories, and then it ties in with Taylor Swift and all kinds of crazy stuff. So before I get to my conversation with Grant, I do need to tell you about my sponsors, as I always do. Really cool band at the beginning of the episode, Talking Props from Santiago, Chile. If you want to check them out, they're on Facebook, Instagram, Talking Props CL. And they're on Spotify as well, so check them out. Really, really great band from South America. Merge 4 sock company. You guys know them. You guys love them. They have socks from the Circle Jerks and Sublime and Foo Fighters and Steve Caballero and all kinds of crazy cool socks. Head on over to merge4.com or check them out on the social media platforms at Merge 4. We are doing that contest. It's coming up on our Patreon, an exclusive Patreon only contest for Merge 4, where you can win some cool Merge 4 swag. And all you have to do to be eligible for that is sign up at the $5 level at our Patreon. Become a patron. It's patreon.com/TOTOT podcast. I've been putting up some new stuff over there, and I have some bonus episodes I'm getting ready to post. And it's a really cool thing. So if you want to help out the show and win some cool stuff, head on over to patreon.com/TOTOT podcast. Speaking of patrons, we have three new patrons this week. So I want to give a shout out to Jacob Johnson from Florida, Mike Wiseman from New York, and Zach Campone from New York. Thank you guys so much for signing up and helping this show stay afloat and helping us keep the lights on, man. So shout out to Jacob, Mike, and Zach. Thank you guys for being patrons. And the last sponsor I need to tell you about, man. I am starting to feel really sick. The last sponsor I need to tell you about is Permanence Tattoo Gallery. My buddy Jacob Harrison over there at Permanence in Anderson, Indiana on Meridian Street downtown. No better place to get your ink. If you are in the area, head on over to Permanence Tattoo Gallery in downtown Anderson, Indiana. You can get more information on Facebook and Instagram at Permanence Tattoo Gallery. As always, if you guys want to become a sponsor of this fine program, you can hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. I work with all budgets. I'm looking for cool bands, cool companies, whatever you got, hit me up and we will make it happen. Make sure to follow us on all of the social media platforms. It's at TOTOTpodcast. I hang out mostly on Instagram, but Facebook is on, right on the back, man. Facebook's doing awesome. We almost have 1,000 over on Facebook now. So don't sleep on Facebook. Head on over there and check it out. So I'm going to try to do this intro a little bit shorter. We're going to do a TOTOT radio segment. So cue the theme music. Radio.
When I've got the music, I've got the place to go.
On this edition of TOTOT Radio, I am going to highlight a band that I absolutely love. I've been listening to for a long time. I don't think they ever got the props that they deserved. And they just recently got back together for a reunion tour. And I don't think a lot of you out there that listen to this podcast probably know about this band. unless you're from Australia, which is their native land. I'm talking about Paper Arms. They just recently did a reunion tour with Strike Anywhere over in Australia. And I love Paper Arms. I don't even remember how I found out about them. Somehow, I think Brian, my old bass player in the Ataris, had their record or something, or I stole the MP3s off his computer. I don't know, but I've been listening to them forever. They've got a lot of releases out, and they're a killer band. Josh Mann, their singer and guitar player, we're going to do an interview on Tuesday, but I had some family stuff come up and I had to push that out. But Josh is going to be on the show very, very soon. And I thought, what better way to prime all of you out there listening for his episode than by introducing you, if you didn't already know, to Paper Arms. So I'm going to play one of their songs that I just really love. It's called Tanks of Dust. It is off their record, The Smoke Will Clear, from 2014. You guys need to check out Paper Arms. I don't know if they're going to get back and actually be like an active band or if it was a one-time thing. When Josh is on the show, we will talk about that, I'm sure. But Paper Arms is amazing. I love them. You're going to hear them right now. So here it is, Tanks of Dust by Paper Arms. So there it was, Tanks of Dust by Paper Arms. Like I said, their singer and guitarist, Josh Mann, is going to be on the program very soon. So check out all their stuff before he comes on the show. Become a big fan of Paper Arms like I am. You're not going to regret it. They're great. Okay, so that is the intro, guys and girls. And I am ready to go to my conversation with Grant Emerson from the awesome band Delta Ray. I am not feeling well. I felt a lot better during this conversation, so you guys are going to hear quite a difference in my voice, I think. But I hope you guys enjoy it. And, you know, I try to be open-minded, and I really like Delta Ray. When I used to work at the Hangout Music Festival down in Gulf Shores, Alabama, they played on my stage one time, and they're great. I mean, I think good music is good music. This podcast concentrates a lot on punk and metal and hardcore and stuff like that, But man, good music is good music, and it doesn't matter. And Delta Ray is a stellar band, and you guys need to check them out. But I'm going to stop babbling. This is my conversation with Mr. Grant Emerson of the awesome band Delta Ray. Here we go. And I'm on the line with Mr. Grant Emerson from Delta Ray. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well, man. I'm excited to have you on the show. I've been trying to branch out. I know if most listeners out there will know that it's mostly punk and metal musicians on the show, but it's kind of cool. I like your band a lot. It's kind of got that country vibe. You guys are from North Carolina, correct?
Yes, we were the band was born in Durham, North Carolina, and then now we are based out of Nashville, Tennessee.
How do you like it down in Nashville? You like it down there?
I like it. It's hot, I would say. It's I don't know, it's like 100 degrees yesterday, but I love the big city, and the inspiration is bountiful here. There's so many great musicians and inspiring people in the city that it's I grew up in a small town, and it was easy to sort of feel like a big fish in a small pond there. And moving to Nashville, it's the big serving of humble pie that I needed to be like, you know what, you ain't shit.
Well, that's the thing. Growing up, you know, playing punk and metal, like my dream and the friends of mine in my band, our dream was to move to Los Angeles. But when you live in Indiana, like I do, it's easy to get to that kind of the top of the mountain as far as bands go. You move out there and you're nobody, right?
Yeah. And it just seems like the game is so much more complicated. It's a lot more networking and right place at the right time, shaking the right hands. And it becomes much more than getting up on stage and playing music or playing music with your friends, which is, you know, why we all started doing it in the first place.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk about, we met on Twitter. And
yes.
The cool thing about that was you hit me up because you listened to the podcast, and it kind of, I mean, I guess we have a lot in common, because I mean, I know you play in a country band, but I've played in reggae bands and country bands, and I like all kinds of music. So what made you get into the podcast, or how did you find out about it?
I found you. I was just thinking about that a minute ago. You interviewed, and I can't remember his name right now, and I'd probably destroy his last name, but the bass player from Thrice. I'm a big,
Eddie Breckenridge.
Yes. So I was just, I think they had recently released some new music, and I was just, I'm grateful that it's 2019 and there's podcasts out there that interview bass players. And, and I found you and I was like, oh, this is perfect. And I listened to it. I mean, I do play in a country band, but it's also a little bit more, I would say we're more dynamic than maybe the first thing that comes to mind. I mean, cause there's a big heavy dose of Southern Gothic stuff, and the drummer myself grew up in North Carolina. So we're big, him and I are both big, like metal fans in North Carolina metal. Like I think the band I've seen the most in my life is Between the Buried and Me. And, like he is legend. So there's all this kind of heavy element that the rhythm section of this group brings to it. You know, we definitely do play country songs, but we also play like epic, murder ballads where it's a witch that is, you know, taking someone to, you know, to their death. So I think that, I looked you up on Twitter, found it, listened to it and loved it. And then, I mean, I've been, keeping up with it as best I can. Cause I think what you're doing is cool.
Well, that's awesome, man. I wanted to say my first experience with you guys. If you listen to the podcast at all, you might've heard, I used to be in artist relations for the Hangout Music Festival down in Alabama. And I know that you guys played the Hangout Fest. I can't remember what year it was. Do you remember what year that was?
I think maybe we've played it a couple times. It might have been 2013 was the first year we played it. And we played like the pre-party show. And then we were with the big like Hangout sand hand statue is. I don't know if it's there every year. But we played that, and we played it the year that Tom Petty, Kings of Leon, and Stevie Wonder headlined.
Yeah, that was my second year working for the festival. I remember, I think when I saw you guys was the pre-party, because I was actually, I wouldn't say the stage manager, but I was the artist relations guy for that stage. But I didn't, that night I just kind of drank beer and watched.
I mean, as you do when you're on the beach in Alabama.
Yeah, I lived down there for about 7 years, man, after I got that job. And I miss it sometimes. I've told the story on the podcast a couple times about meeting, I met Tom Petty, and he asked me for if he could get some Coke, and I looked at him kind of funny, and I said, like soda? And he goes, yeah, man, what'd you think I meant?
Of course. Yeah. He's setting you up like that. I mean, when it's Tom Petty talking to somebody.
Yeah, he was totally setting me up, man. But I just remember thinking the same thing that you just said, like you guys play country, but there's so many other elements in there, and the harmonies between everybody that sings. I think it's really cool that there's three siblings in the group as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. They're very blonde, like Nordic looking people in the band. And, but yeah, they grew up singing together in the Bay Area, and that's where they met the fourth singer, Liz, and they grew up singing in a cappella groups, and then, wanted to start a band, and yeah.
So how did, I know that they had something kind of going, the band was kind of going before, and you joined in 2010. How did you come to find them or come to know them and join the band?
I met them through Mike, the drummer, who is from where I'm from in Raleigh and grew up there. And I went to college in Wilmington and studied music and actually was lucky enough to study under Steve Bailey for all the bass heads out there that get into Bass Extremes and Victor Wooten. Studied with him, moved back to Raleigh and met Mike, and we met each other and sort of knew that like we wanted to be professional musicians, whatever that meant. I mean, yeah. We played in cover bands. We played this one like Latino festival in Raleigh with a singer from Peru. It was and like with people that have been on TV shows, and then eventually, because Mike is a networker way more than I am. I'm very introverted. I'm just like you. He meets the people. I'll show up and I'll fucking nail the job. And then he met Mike randomly, or he met Eric at a party he was running sound at, and then he brought me in to the band, and that was, I feel like for me, a little bit over nine years ago, and it's been, you know, I don't know, hold on to your pants ever since then.
So did they already have some interest? Were they signed? Like what kind of situation did you find yourself in when you joined?
It was still like, I mean, the band had existed for about 9 months and they had, I saw the band once before I joined the band, and it was just like this, jet engine of vocal harmony. I was like, it was like an overwhelming sensation, like in the best way possible. I was like, yeah. I'd never heard anything like this. And all the bands I had been in before then, like, didn't, you know, it's like someone sang because someone had to sing and not because anyone necessarily was a singer. So it was, that was really great in a way that, you know, it was like just regional touring. Like, I think that we would caravan up to New York every few months in like three cars, because we didn't have a van at the time, and hadn't made really any music videos, but we had just, I think maybe I had been in the band for a year, and we made Bottom of the River for like, it was like a lot of pizza and a lot of favors and, you know, like $2,000 and just a lot of eager people. And that's really was the biggest calling card for us. I mean, that's what got us our first record deal. It somehow made its way to Seymour Stein, who was like a legend, who signed Madonna, the Ramones, and the Talking Heads. So that somehow got us into Rockefeller Center playing in his office.
Wow. You know, that had to be nerve-wracking, right?
It's nerve-wracking and to the like the millionth degree, because I also have like severe anxiety, so that I think maybe I should have picked a different job. But but just like being in a record executive, this very old wise man in his office and just playing a song, and I'm like, keep playing more. And so we played for almost an hour for him, and then had an offer, you know, from them in a couple months after that. And that's really what launched us, what got us onto VH1. We played Jay Leno, played Conan O'Brien. It was a lot to keep track of, and also, you know, keep track of who you are as a person, because that shit happens. And then you go home and people look at you different, and you're just like, I'm still the same guy who wants to go eat some Mexican food with you if that's cool.
So you guys signed to Sire Records in 2012. That was the first record label, right?
Yes, and we crowdfunded that record. We did a Kickstarter right before we signed with them, and when we signed with them, they bought the record and released it.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so that was the first one, and then we released a second record with them in 2015, and we recorded that with a few producers, Rob Cavallo, another intimidating behemoth in the music industry.
Yeah, I don't even know what I would do. I've worked with some producers, man, but like getting in the studio with Rob, that would be insane.
It was at his house in Calabasas, and like there's this huge wall of guitar. It's just like one of those things where I'm like, man, I'm from like this small town outside of Raleigh.
Yeah.
Like I thought I was just like gonna be, because when I joined Delta Ray, I was a guitar teacher in like an after school program, you know, teaching kids how to, you know, play ACDC and stuff, which was fun.
I do that for a living now, actually.
I think it's rad and amazing that even today kids still go back to like that rock and roll. And I also teach when I'm off the road. I love it. I think it's fun, man.
Yeah, I have a summer camp for kids and a workshop in the wintertime where we put bands together as well. So like my full-time gig, I have 70 students a week that I teach private lessons to. And then every 2 or 3 months, we do a workshop where we have 20 or 30 kids and we put bands together and have a big concert for their parents. So I'm way into music education. That's my whole thing was, you know, I have kids now. Being on the road doesn't really work for me, but I always wanted to do something in music to make my living. I didn't want to go work at a bank or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it still feels like you're still, and also that like provides a huge stability because some of the people, like one of the guys in the band has almost a 2-year-old son and my partner has a 3-year-old and it's just like, you gotta have a little bit more stability because, you know, first joining a band, it feels like you're being a pirate. You're just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want any bills. I'm going to go, you know, eat at the truck stop. And then that works for a little bit. And then you get old and your back hurts.
Well, yeah, I remember like when I was young being on the road, I would just, you know, put stuff in storage or just like quote unquote, live at my mom's because I was on the road so much. I didn't want to pay rent for a place I was never going to sleep in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah. But then, yeah, priorities change and you're like, you know what? I want a quiet place that I come home to. And it's cool. It's rock and roll, but it's loud and
Well, and I respect everybody that can do it. But as far as I'm concerned, like, I just don't think I could go on the road. My kids are little. I've got a 3-year-old and an almost 2-year-old. And I get offers a lot to go back on the road. And sometimes the money is good. Sometimes it's not. But I don't know, man, leaving for more than a few days. I just don't know if I can do it, but I respect anybody that can do it.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's rad that you've got the ability to say no to it, you know, because that way you can be,
it's hard. It's hard sometimes. Like I got an offer a few months ago to go to Australia for 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh, that'd be so great. But I just couldn't do it, man.
Yeah, it's like, but can my kids come?
Yeah, you know? Can my kids and my wife, can we have our own bus?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm excited. We're playing the train cruise in February of next year. And like, we're lucky enough to have to where we have some space available where we can bring significant others. And that's what sort of makes it fun and like where you can bring them along for that ride. And so they can sort of see behind the veil a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, man. We always had a rule back in the day, like, you know, because nobody had kids, nobody really was married at the time. It's like no wives or girlfriends. But now that I'm, you know, 40 years old, if I was on the road, it'd be really nice to have my kids and my wife and do normal things. You know, you see those pictures of like Metallica, they're on tour in Europe and James is coming out of like a store with his wife and a bunch of like bags because they went shopping. Like that'd be cool if you could afford to take people everywhere you went. But I've never been in a band where the money was quite that good.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's those opportunities are few, you know, few and far between just because it's like, I don't know. It's a lot harder to make, you know, to make money. And then, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's unless you get those mega hits and then, you know, which I guess in a way we all sort of hope for some magic to, you know, to strike.
Well, I mean, we all know that, you know, nobody's living off their Spotify streams.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, I always think about that interview with the Black Keys where they talk about their parents were mad at them for saying no to a mayonnaise commercial placement. And they were like, you could have made my whole salary in a year for this one spot. You know, times are different now, I think.
You know what I think is crazy is like, you know, bands, I have friends in bands that have had 200-300 million streams and like each member of the band got like $2,000. But then you've got like my kids being toddlers, they watch YouTube all the time. And you've got these kids on YouTube that just play with toys. And I went and I Googled it and like, they're making $80,000 a day off of YouTube because they have so many views. I don't understand that.
Yeah. I don't understand how that money is just out there to be made, maybe I'm stupid for not figuring it out.
An ethical problem because my wife and I are like, you know, when our kids get older, we'll just start doing YouTube videos. But then I'm like, is that a good thing to do? You're going to make money, but are you exploiting your kids? Like, it just feels like a really weird slippery slope, you know?
Yeah, it does sort of. It, I guess it, there is ethics in that where you're like, what kind of, you know, it's like, what kind of life is it? And then you're already pushing them into like the that emotional cycle connection with the internet, which I don't know, for I think for our generation is complicated because we remember a time, you know, to date ourselves before the internet existed.
Yeah, it's so strange because I know that like when I, for the podcast, for example, like I treat it like I'm promoting a band. I have an Instagram and a Facebook and all this stuff. And sometimes I'll post something and I'll get like, you know, 200 likes, and then I'll post something and I'll get 2 likes. And I feel weird. Like it's this weird emotional thing that I don't think people used to have to deal with on a daily basis. Right.
Oh, I totally agree. And it's like, what could be different between those two posts? Absolutely. Absolutely nothing. And then it's just the algorithm that, you know,
yeah,
Big Brother's controlling. So,
okay, so we'll get back into some music talk.
Yeah.
So I was very interested. I know that you guys in 2013 did a new version of the song If I Loved You, and I read that Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac actually played on it. Is that true? And if so, how did that happen?
That is true. The story is a little bit of like, you know, it's not what we want it to be, where we were we've never met Lindsey Buckingham, we had just been signed to Warner Brothers Records, and we were working with Rob Cavallo, and we were just trying to like rework this song because, you know, Warner Brothers really believed in it and thought that it had hit potential. And so we were trying something new, and we were on the way, you know, we were back in Los Angeles, and we get to the studio, and Rob's like, you know, I can't remember the person who brought us to the studio. Was like, did he tell you who the guest on the track is? And we're like, no, we have no idea. What are you talking about? And Rob asked us, you know, do you guys know Fleetwood Mac? And we're just like, okay. Hi, Rob. Yes, we do know Fleetwood Mac. He's like, well, my buddy Lindsey was over here the other day. And we're just like, mother, what? And, you know, and apparently Lindsey was just over there because Rob and Lindsey have worked together on his solo records and Fleetwood Mac records. And, Lindsey asked him to play some stuff that he was working on, and Lindsey was on the couch playing this thing called a griffin, which is like this, not a mandolin, but not a ukulele kind of thing. And he just played this part, and Rob was like, I like that. Let's put it down. And so that's how it happened.
That's crazy, man. I mean,
yeah.
It's insane that, you know, your band has a song with Lindsey Buckingham, but you didn't get to meet him. I mean, you think there's any time in the future where you guys could maybe set up like a play date or something?
Right. I mean, I hope so. I mean, I think it would be rad to do. I mean, I think Fleetwood Mac's in an interesting permutation of itself right now with Mike Campbell, you know, helping fill his shoes. But I guess a different, I could pivot and say that we have met Don Henley.
I have a history with Don Henley.
Yeah, I feel like you've got to. do you want to go first?
Well, no, you can talk about Don Henley. I joined the band shortly after kind of that song was a thing. And there are these stories, though, about, Chris Rowe, the singer of the Ataris. Back in the day, I guess Don Henley wore a shirt that said, who the fuck is somebody? I can't remember what artist it was. So then when Chris played this big festival, when the song had gotten big, he had a shirt on that said, who the fuck is Don Henley? And Don Henley thought he was like throwing shade. And there was some weird stuff for a while, but I came in right at the tail end of that. So,
oh man, I feel like I think that would be kind of funny, but we met Don because our song Bottom of the River was on Sirius XM Spectrum channel.
Okay.
And he liked the song and somehow got a hold of us, and wanted the singers to come in and record on a record he was making, and the song that they ended up recording was part of a batch of songs that was on a record called Cass Country. And the Delta Ray, you know, edition song didn't make that record, so I don't know where that is, but it was wild. I mean, he comes out to shows and whenever we play Dallas, and
that's awesome, man.
It's very I don't know. It's wild to think. It's another one of those things where I'm like, man, I never thought I was going to be like sitting in a waiting room. And then I hear a person walk in and I'm like, I'm not ready to look at him. Cause I'm like, that's Don Henley standing there in a long trench coat. And sure enough, it is.
Well, hey, next time you see him, ask him if he enjoys the house that our cover bought for him.
Oh, right. Gosh.
I'm just kidding. Don, I know you're not listening, but if you are, I love you, man. Thank you.
Yeah. He's been a big, source of like guidance and wisdom for us. I mean, just dealing with, you know, the music business.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
So you guys, I know you guys do a lot of fests. We talked about Hangout Fest. We talked about... you know, you did all the TV stuff. You played Lollapalooza in 2014. Now, was that the Lollapalooza in the States or was the one in South America?
That was one in Chicago.
Okay.
And that was like, we had just gotten back from doing Armed Forces. Sorry, it's storming. I don't know if you can hear the thunder. We had just gotten back from like Bahrain and Djibouti playing for the
Do you know what
soldiers.
The capital of Djibouti is?
I do.
It's Djibouti.
Djibouti. Yeah, we played Camp Lemonnier there, we were in Bahrain during Ramadan. It was like, it was an incredible experience. And we just fly over to Chicago and immediately go on stage basically at Lollapalooza. And it was like, it was one of my favorite festivals we've ever played, man. Chicago, it's in the summer, it's hot, sweaty, and the people are so into it.
So you guys, in 2014, it must have been a pretty busy year for the fest, because you said Hangout Fest, you played Lollapalooza, and I also saw that you did the 29th annual Farm Aid. Can you, you have any tidbits or some good stories from Farm Aid?
Well, Farm Aid was the first, I guess, one of the first shows I ever got my parents to go backstage at, and it's at Walnut Creek Amphitheater, which is like where I grew up going to see like the Allman Brothers. You know, every year I go see the Counting Crows there. And I just remember my dad is like this sort of, he'll have an experience about something and then 2 weeks later, he's ready to tell me how he feels about it. Like it just takes him a while. And I just remember him walking past Neil Young and just being like, shaking, just sort of nodding his head like, yep, that's pretty cool. But Farm Aid was amazing, and it was a great, like, we've made some really long friendships with Jamie Johnson, and also like being on stage with Willie Nelson. It's just, maybe I'm an idiot, but I'm just sort of like, there's these things that I'm, you know, telling you right now that I'm like, I never thought would happen that I'm, you know.
Oh no, dude, it's anybody. I mean, I totally feel it. Anybody in music that has any sort of success. I mean, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you know that I bring up Metallica quite a bit. I remember when I met them and told them about, you know, the band I was in, and they talked to me like, I mean, it's, you can go to a meet and greet and meet somebody that you like, but when you're actually, I don't know, when you feel like you belong there, it's a whole other thing. And then when you think back about it and all these experiences that you've had, it's kind of mind blowing, man. The fact that you were on stage with Willie Nelson, the fact that your dad was in the same vicinity as Neil Young. That's insane.
Yeah. You know, and I'm just, it's so far removed from like, you know, playing the Chili Peppers version of Higher Ground in my bedroom.
Yeah.
13 times in a row, you know.
By the way, how did you get into bass? I always find it interesting, because with me teaching, I teach bass and guitar, and most of the kids that come to me, they all want to play guitar, and then some of them move to bass or whatever. But how did you pick that? And what age were you when you started playing bass?
I started playing when I was 16, and I picked it because I had two really good friends in high school that both played guitar and wanted to start a band, and it was either drums or bass. And I was like, my parents more into me playing bass.
Yeah, you can wear headphones, right?
Yeah, exactly. I can play it in my room and I can put headphones on and no one knows what's going on. And also I was a huge, the Chili Peppers are my favorite band of all time. And I love the Chili Peppers music, but I also love, Flea is a big inspiration and is,
do you follow him on Instagram? Cause he's awesome.
I do. I pre-ordered his book the day that it was announced and I'm like just patiently waiting for it to come out. But I love the energy that he puts out there and the sensitivity he has. And, it's great. I actually, that's another thing. I got to meet him at, Austin City Limits when he was on tour with Atoms for Peace.
I saw that picture. I was kind of, when we started talking about this, I went through your pictures either on Facebook or Instagram and I saw you with Flea. I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was where I knew that there was a potential for him to be there just because Atoms for Peace was playing. And I was out watching Wilco with the drummer and then my phone just starts going like off like crazy. Like everyone in the band is like, you know, text me, Grant, Flea's backstage. You have to come back here. And I look at Mike and I'm like, I don't know, man. Like I have this idea of how I want him to meet him. Like I want him to be side stage watching my band and just be like, that's awesome. And Mike, you know, almost, you know, getting in a fight with me, was like, you're going back there to meet him. And I you know, he's like, you're going to do it. That's like, we sort of push each other to meet our heroes whenever we're feeling timid about it. And, yeah. I found him and I was like, he was like on his phone. And then I just waited for him to finish. And I literally walked up to him and said, excuse me, Mr. Flea. You're a big, you know, inspiration and fan. And I have a Chili Peppers tattoo on my arm and showed it to him and, you know, got a picture with him and it was pretty rad. You know, I think it was, you know, it's another one of those things from, man, never thought that would happen.
Have you ever seen, his film debut back when he was super young in that old punk rock movie Suburbia?
Oh, I don't know if I've seen Suburbia. I'll have to add that to the to watch list.
Yeah. He has a pet rat in the movie. He's one of the punk kids that like lives in the old, like abandoned house.
That's rad.
And I think he's probably, I think he's like maybe 14 or 15. Like he's super, super young in the movie. He's got a shaved head, but it's him, man.
That's rad. I mean, I love him in, the Big Lebowski.
And, oh yeah.
And then he was also in
Back to the Future, man.
Yes. Back to the Future.
Or Back to the Future 2, I guess is the one he was in. He was, played Needles. He played Marty's boss.
Yes. Gosh. Yeah. It's so funny seeing him play these really like mean, intense characters and, you know that
he's the sweetest guy in the world, right?
Yeah. You know, in reality, like the dude is just like bubbling over with love for any and everyone. So
there's some video. What was it? I'm trying to think. There's a movie called The Other F Word. It's a documentary about like punk rock musicians and just musicians in general and, you know, being fathers. And he's on that as well. And there's this scene where like his daughter's playing piano or he's playing piano or whatever, but he's just like staring at his daughter and then he starts crying. Like he just seems like he's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I love that movie. I thought that was such a rad, like, you know, context to just put like where it's like all these guys are like, you know, they're like, I didn't think I was going to live this long and,
yeah.
And this was going to happen and I was going to turn out, life was going to turn out to be this way. And, it's cool. It's just humbling to just realize that, you know, that the musicians and all, or the people that we idolize they're, you know, it's at the crux of it. They're people too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with this podcast, you know, like you and I have never met. I've seen your band at a festival or whatever, but you know, there's people on this podcast that I haven't met that I get really scared to talk to, like Matt Pinfield, you know, 120 yeah. Minutes, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like he was the guy that told me who to listen to growing up. He came on the podcast and 5 minutes into the conversation, I felt like I was just talking to my best friend. Like it's such a nice, like kind of breath of fresh air. I haven't had anybody on the show yet that was a prick. Like
yeah.
Everybody's been super, super cool. And even guys that I thought, you know, I have this weird like anxiety about talking, like, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? It turns out great. So yeah, when you meet, they tell you not to meet your heroes because you never know how they're going to be. Like I was so worried when I met Metallica for the first time that they were going to be pricks and then it was going to ruin my entire childhood, but they weren't. I mean, I know there's stories like that out there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. And that's, I mean, but that's, I guess that's the risk you got to take. You got to sort of, you know, you got to take your own advice and be like, well, this is, I have the chance to do this. So I, you know, it could go either way. And I do feel bad. My heart goes out when people are like, oh, I met that person. They're an asshole. And I'm like, man, you met somebody in one moment, in one instant. And
well,
who
and we,
knows
we
what.
Talk about that on the show as well, because, you know, everybody on the show is a touring musician for the most part. You don't always have the best day when people catch you at a certain time. I mean, you could be the nicest guy in the world, but they catch you at a time where you're not feeling that great. You've been fighting with your significant other on the telephone. You didn't sleep. I mean, I'm sure you're not a ray of sunshine every day on the road, right?
Oh no. I mean, I definitely have, I think I have the reputation for being the grumpiest one in the band for sure. I mean, and, you know, and we're having this conversation. So, I mean, yeah, you can, you know, you know, when we drive ourselves, we have like a Sprinter van and trailer. And so, you know, it's very, you know, we're doing the work, you know, so it's easy to get worn down, I guess I should say.
Is there anybody in the band that does most of the driving? Because every time I've been in a band that toured that we didn't like have a bus or we didn't have a driver, there was always like the one guy who kind of tends to drive more.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you. Is it because you're like a control freak? Because I've been in bands with guys before, but like, I just, and if we have a wreck, I want it to be my wreck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, knock on wood, we haven't been in any wrecks.
That's good. That's good.
But I think it's mostly, I think I would say this to the whole band and see what sort of reactions I got from this or, you know, shit I got for it afterwards. But I think I'm the best driver and I drive the fastest. And, and I also just feel the most, I mean, maybe this control, I feel the most secure and safe when I'm driving, and maybe a couple other ones.
Okay.
But that's really it. And also it just, there's all these like, it just takes out a question of playing chicken with each other every morning. I'm just like, I'll just get in the driver's seat. Let's go.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to play chicken with you today, you know, with this particular thing. But yeah.
Awesome. So I wanted to talk about this one thing that's been in the news recently. I know you guys are crowdfunding this new release. You're independent again. And you were on the Big Machine label group. You signed with them in 2015, I'm pretty sure. When you announced that you were leaving that label was when all this Taylor Swift, Scooter Braun thing happened. How did all of that, I mean, I know it affected you guys. I read about it in Rolling Stone. But like, what all happened there? You guys had already decided to leave the label, correct?
Yes. I mean, we had already left the label. We had been planning on announcing like that we were independent and that we were releasing a Kickstarter to fund a new record on July 1st. You know, because it's like, it's close to Independence Day. And it's also like, it was a date that was far off enough to where we were like, we can hit this target and we can do it. And we, like, the day before we had an off day, and then like this news comes out and we're just like, you know, what is going on? And the whole
thing was like, she wanted to buy her masters or something, correct?
Yes. She wanted to buy her masters and own her music. And then it effectively, like, you know, the person that she built her career with sold it to someone that, she says she's been bullied by, like, that she doesn't like, it leaves a really bad taste in her mouth that like, she didn't get, the opportunity to own her stuff, and now someone that she doesn't get, you know, doesn't like, is going to be profiting from her music. And so, I mean, that all happened, and like, we, you know, and it's just, and then all, I think the next day is when we announce, and then all the Swifties are sort of searching, see that we've left the label.
And the Swifties, if people don't know out there, are Taylor Swift's fans, right?
Yes, they're her fan. They're like her army of like super passionate fans, and in a great way, it's exposed us to meeting all these people that are just like really, they're just like hardcore music fans, and that's like, and they're also on the internet, which I think is like, being a hardcore music fan and also being good at the internet don't necessarily like line up. As far as like cross sections of personalities. And so they were into championing us as a way to like, you know, sort of give the finger to the man, you know, and I don't know, we were super grateful for it. It's just a random serendipitous thing where the cosmos was like, this will sort of line up. And
you guys had a $30,000 goal for the Kickstarter, which is a pretty modest goal for a Kickstarter for a new record. Where are you guys at right now? Cause it's something crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was what we raised 30 grand on for our first record, our first Kickstarter that we did in 2011. And right now we're at $330,000.
So you guys are going to do a double album?
We're doing more than that. I mean, we have two records planned, and then we're going to do music video, like a certain number of music videos. I think it's like two or three right now per record, but we had a goal of like 30 grand for one record, 60 grand for two records. And these are both like, they're called the light and the dark, where it's these two major sides of my band, of like the light, which, you know, I would think you could maybe say is a little bit more country pop, like sunshine stuff. And then the dark is just like, you know, it was like otherworldly, like stuff that you're like, where did this come from?
And the name Delta Ray kind of has an air of that as well. Can you tell me the story about that?
So that the name came actually, the siblings' mother is an author who's writing a book, and about this girl from the South who, in an attempt to like rescue her father, is awakens the Greek gods, and she's from the South, and so that's where like the Delta and the Ray is a little bit with the Greek, pulling those two together. And they just, I guess they picked the name before I joined, and they just, you know, stole it from their mom. And, you know, I guess maybe it's a long preemptive book tour for her whenever she finishes it. Cause I think she's in the process of the second round of edits for the book right now. So the siblings have read it, but I haven't read it, and I'm excited about it.
Well, I like the fact that, you know, people that dig Taylor Swift like your band, but you guys seem to have so much more depth and like just more art going on in your band. It's not just a pop country thing. Like there's all this deeper kind of seated stuff in the band. I really think that's admirable. That's really cool. It's like you guys take everything super seriously.
Yeah. And I think for better or for worse, I feel like with a lot of like mainstream music now, it's like, you know, I think all the music has its place in the world, but like, it feels like a lot of stuff now is like Friday night, Saturday night music, where you're just like, you know, sort of like, I'm just going to get hammered and have a good time, which I think, you know, has its place, but like, we very much are earnest. And, you know, we have songs that are political and, you know, and stuff like that, where it just feels like if you're not talking about the state of the world right now, you're sort of like, you know, tacitly agreeing with it, you know? So
yeah, I just figured with, you know, the current administration, there'd be a lot more punk rock out there.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. And I feel like I was like, man, maybe this is the solace that I can pull from this administration, is that we're going to have a lot of great art that comes out. And, you know, and I think that it's happening, but it's great, but it's not satisfying, because we're still living through it. But yeah, I mean, we released a song called Hands Dirty that's about the Me Too movement, and I think that's what's so great about just to pump up the songwriters in my band. It's like you can listen to the song and like it just for the for the groove or the beat, which I think a lot of people likes music for. But if you want to dig into the lyrics, you know, they'll go with you. They're not shallow. And, you know, and that one's just like, in a lot of ways, not about getting your due, like where you're like, I work hard, but I'm still not getting, you know, what I should be getting and being valued the way I should be. And,
do you ever feel like, you know, in the genre that you guys, you know, I identify with being, I mean, closely pop country, I know there's other stuff going on as well, but you know, all the trouble the Dixie Chicks got in back during the Bush administration, do you ever feel like you have to kind of watch what you say around certain people because of certain, I guess, stereotypical people that might like your music? I mean, is that a thing? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we were especially sensitive to that whenever we were traveling internationally and giving like interviews, because I think that was also something that we talked about it a lot. We're very like, you know, those, you know, 8 hour, 12 hour drives in the van, we're, you know, sort of talking about stuff because we want to make sure that we're walking the right sort of, or we're striking the right kind of tone. But I mean, we are, I guess we are particular in certain, like being careful about it, but at the same time, we're getting up and, you know, talking about, you know, we have a song called All Good People. That's about, it's talking about how the song was written right after the Charleston massacre shooting happened, where, you know, a white supremacist came into the church and killed 9 people. And we talk about that, and we speak in plain language, and saying that, you know, that it's not right, that we don't believe in it, and we believe that we, you know, we're all the same, and we have to lift up these people and treat them equally. And I think I don't know if we're not necessarily getting up on stage and you know, saying fuck Trump. We're not saying that.
you guys aren't the country anti-flag.
Right. I think we are in a sense that there's women on stage, which in country music is uncommon. And, you know, it's, you know, in country music, it's a lot harder for women artists to succeed. Yeah. And, so in that, I mean, it already feels punk rock to have like female fronted band in country that is also, you know, just up there, just like shredding stuff. I mean, it's like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you like look up a video of us playing Hands Dirty, you put that next to a country artist of our same caliber. It's like, we, you know, I will say it. We mop the floor. with that kind of stuff.
Well, that's awesome. And I just think it's, you know, it's cool that you guys are in a genre where stereotypically it would be, you know, make America great again and all. I mean, you know what it's like, cause you live in Nashville. I live in Indiana. It's pretty similar. But the fact that you guys speak out on issues that you feel strongly about, even if what you're saying about the issue isn't maybe popular in your genre, I really respect that.
Yeah. And I think it's just trying to, and I think that that's a great thing about, or I'm hopeful that it is the great thing about music and art. It's like, that's something that like, That is, I think, an invitation for people to listen to the other side or listen to a different opinion. You know, the other day we were playing a show and there was a guy that was the MC that was wearing a Confederate flag shirt. I was like, this isn't what we signed up for. And I was like, I forgot to bring, you know, because like on stage, like we'll you know, like I'll wear a Black Lives Matter hat, or I'll wear a shirt that has like, you know, that has like a rainbow flag on it. It's like, we, you know, we're saying it with our music, but we're also saying it with like, I'm saying it with my body and like what with this stuff that I'm, you know, yeah, that I'm putting out there.
You're a walking billboard, man. You're showing people what you think. I like that.
Yeah. And you know, that's I think that's just sort of the way, maybe the way it is these days.
Well, and the one thing, I mean, this is kind of getting off track, but you know how you've heard people all the time, like Robert De Niro or Glenn Close or Meryl Streep or someone will say something at an award show, and then everybody's on, you know, Facebook and telling all their friends like, they're rich, they don't have a right to say anything, they should keep out of politics, just do your job, just be an actor. But then every day I have to read every dipshit I went to high school with their racist stuff on Facebook. It's like, their soapbox is the Oscars. Your soapbox is your Facebook status. I wish people wouldn't be hypocrites, you know?
Yeah. And just be like, you know, everyone's entitled to say what they want to say. It's like, so Meryl Streep can't say what she wants to say, but yet you can.
Yeah. Like, and is it, you drive a truck, she's won Oscars, so you can say what you want, but she can't say what she wants.
Yeah. I think there's probably some, there's other issues at play there where it's like, yeah, I think, and that's the hard part too, because it's hard to meet people where they're going to listen to you. And I think a lot of people are on Facebook and Twitter, and I mean, I am there too. And it's we're all just trying to figure out how to live with each other and yeah, share these opinions. And it's I don't know, it's hard. And then you got, you know, then you got Russia coming and giving us all this propaganda.
No, like I listen to a lot of podcasts, and like Joe Rogan or someone the other day was talking about how, you think of a product and then like 10 minutes later you see an ad for it on your Facebook. But man, that's real shit.
It's absolutely true. Like, I mean, the band was just talking about this app called Cameo that I had never heard of.
Dude, I used that for my wife's birthday. I got Alan Stone to send her a video.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah. We're buddies with Alan Stone. Like, his guitar player lives in Nashville, Trevor. And
well, I tell you what, I paid him to say happy birthday to my wife, so you should help me get him on the show.
Okay. I'll send him a note.
Dude, she would freak out. She'd have to be my co-host. She loves him.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah. He's a sweet dude. I love that song, Brown Eyed Lover, that they put out.
Oh, yeah. That is so good. Like, I love his stuff, and I follow him on Instagram, and he just seems like the nicest dude ever.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And he's got a genuine, like, deep soul grin, you know, that you're like, that dude is tapped into something that I want to be tapped into. But yeah, I hear you. Like, where I searched that Cameo thing, and then now I'm getting served ads on Instagram.
Oh yeah,
from that, and it's like, in a way, I'm like, I guess if I get served the right kind of ads, I'm not so mad at it. But at the same time, it's like privacy is out the window. It's like I'm curious about like what our children's generation will think about, like, if privacy is it's like where they're like, what is that? Like, I don't.
I mean, yeah, it's starting to go away. I mean, I've often thought about doing like a VPN thing. So like when I lived in Jamaica for a while, if you don't know what a VPN is, most people probably know what it is. You probably do too. But I lived in Jamaica and I wanted to watch something on Netflix, and I couldn't do Netflix because they don't service Jamaica. So I had to get a VPN so it looked like I was in like Detroit.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And I know that there's ways around certain things, but as far as like, you have a Google account, you have an Instagram account, you have all these things that are kind of tied together. So yeah, like as soon as I search anything, like the other day we were ordering from Outback Steakhouse and I wanted to go to the menu because we were doing, you know, curbside service at Outback. And today on Facebook, I got like 9 Outback ads. Like I don't want to know what's there every day I sign on to my freaking Facebook page.
Yeah. I mean, a blooming onion is in your future, man.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll get off this tangent, but I love the fact that you're going on these tangents with me. That's kind of what this podcast is about. But, I was wondering, you know, this is that one time on tour. Do you have any crazy tour story you can tell? Sometimes people prepare stuff or sometimes I just kind of spring it on them. So you got anything you could tell us?
I mean, there was one time we were, this was something, we were driving overnight between Los Angeles and San Francisco, and I think we were going through Los Baños.
Oh, I've been through there.
Yeah.
That drive, there's that place that all the cows are out there, and that cow ranch or whatever, yes. That smells really, really bad.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's weird how, like, the country is very big, and you can have these, like, I've been past these cows before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You talk about that drive from LA to San Francisco, man. I'm sure we've stopped at all the same places.
Yeah. It's where you're like, I've been in this truck stop 4 times.
Oh, definitely.
And I live 3,000 miles from here.
Have you ever been to Carl's Corner, Texas, the truck stop that actually bought the town and now it's called Carl's Corner, Texas?
No, I mean, Texas is like, which part of Texas is that in?
We always used to stop there on our way out west. So I think it's before you get to West Texas and it gets kind of, you know, nothingness of out there before you hit El Paso, but it's down, I'm thinking maybe down south, somewhere around San Antonio. But yeah, there's a guy who had a truck stop called Carl's Corner, and he ended up incorporating the area around it because there were enough people that lived there, and they named the town that. So now it's a truck stop and an actual town that has a post office called Carl's Corner, Texas.
That's great. Okay, it looks like it's between, if I'm finding the right one, between Dallas and Austin.
Okay. Yeah.
And later this year I'm playing both those cities. So
you got to stop there, dude. They've got like,
they've
got this wall of fame, all the like bands that have stopped there on tour, like Willie Nelson and like all these like signed 8x10s and stuff. It's really cool.
That's rad. Well, I'm going to try to do that. try to go to Carl's Corner, but, we're driving through Los Baños, and this is, early days, so we were in a Ford Econoline E350 van.
Oh, yeah, I've owned a couple of those in the day.
Yes, ours was named Bernie because it was a like a we, the Holgis' the siblings' parents bought it at an auction because it had been burned for someone trying to get insurance money from it. Anyway, so we're driving and it's late at night. I'm in the very back of the van, and then Mike, the drummer, is driving and just starts screaming. And like, I wake up and there's like these huge, like seems like 18-wheeler lights just bearing down on us through the driver's side. And Mike is like on the road, kind of on the shoulder, and we're towing a trailer. And I would say, okay, cool. I'm dying. We're going to hit an 18-wheeler. And then the lights are coming at us, and then they just go straight up and go over us. And like, and then it circles around and like passes by us again. And like, we are totally convinced that it was just like, it was a UFO.
Yeah.
Some sort of like early, I mean, this was way before drones were popular. And like,
some sort of like remote control plane or something.
Yeah. Like who was like goosing us? And like, and you know, we would see it fly straight up, and like what I would think would happen would be like a plane would stall out and then just crash and blow up. And I was totally expecting to see some big plume of fire behind us, but never did. I mean, that's sort of the weirdest thing.
So to this day, you don't know what it was. So it could have been a UFO.
Yeah. And I feel like people, and we did Google Los Banos, California, and, you know, people have reported, you know, there's maybe, you know, UFO sightings there. So that's, to me, that's like one of the top, most like bizarre things that's ever happened to us on the road.
That's a good story, man.
Yeah.
So, hey, I have a listener question, if you wouldn't mind.
No, not at all.
Okay. So Chris from Illinois, he wants to know, what is your dream venue to play and why? I guess this could be, you know, a place you haven't played yet, or it could be a place you've already played if you've played your dream venue.
Gosh. Well, I mean, I would say, Red Rocks.
That's everybody's. I love Red Rocks so much.
I was like, yeah, it's like Red Rocks, the Gorge. We played a festival out there, but we were on like the alternate stage, and, it's just an amazing, it's like a place where you're like, this is magic.
Well, yeah, the Gorge, it's that big, like natural amphitheater. It's sort of reminiscent of Red Rocks. It's just a little bit on a wider scale kind of, right?
Yeah. And with a huge, like river, like, just this amazing,
I did the Warped Tour a couple times out there. It's beautiful, man.
Yeah. It's rad. And it's in the middle of nowhere.
Totally.
And people don't mind driving there. I think there, and then, I feel like the Hollywood Bowl in LA just seems
that'd be awesome.
You know, that's just another one where like we've never played these places, but, I would love it. And, Wembley Stadium. I don't know.
That'd be great.
I've seen a lot of music, you know, DVDs and like, or, Royal Albert Hall, like the Killers have a live DVD from there that is, I've watched a lot. It's rad. So those are my dream places. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, I've loved having you on the show today. I'd like to know what is in the future. I know you guys have some dates posted up on your website. So what's happening in the next, you know, 6 months to a year for the band?
The next six months, we are we're going on tour to the West Coast through Colorado. And then we'll do the whole like left coast and back through Texas. And then we'll have a new single hopefully out during that time. And then also in March, we will be releasing our first independent record, ever. And, you know, hopefully a lot of more fun stuff with that. So that's what's coming up.
Any plans to go overseas anytime soon?
No plans right now. That's something that we want to do and we have done. But I don't know. I think we've got a little bit more, you know, behind the scenes, I guess, business work to do to get up there. Cause we're such a big band. There's six of us and then, you know, that are on stage and sometimes seven. So then that we're traveling circus of about 9 or 10. And, it takes a lot of, takes a lot of cheddar to get us over there.
Yeah, totally, man. Well, hey man, what are the socials for the band and yourself? If you want to give it a plug so people can check you out.
Thanks. The socials are, it's Delta Ray, RAE, and that's just at Delta Ray on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And then, my Instagram is really dumb. It's my
your name backwards, right?
It's my name backwards. So it's everyone says that it's Nostromi Tanarg. So it's just awful, but it's the same thing on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
I'll make sure to put it in the show notes so people can check it out.
Thank you. I didn't want to torture them with me spelling my name backwards.
Well, hey, and I also saw just like a couple months ago or whatever you guys played in Kokomo, Indiana. That's only like an hour from my house. I wish I would have known. I would have been over there. I missed it somehow.
Oh, well, that was such a cool like town festival. And we're friends with T.A. Weber, who I guess puts that on.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. He does. Well, they sell speakers, right?
Yeah. He gave us an amp a couple years ago that's really beautiful. Has like ornate woodworking on the front of it. They're like, he's like, here, I'd like for you guys to have this. And I'm like, this is beautiful. I don't want to hurt it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe next time you come through Indiana, we can get together and hang out or something.
Absolutely, man. I'll be in touch.
Cool. And hey, I tell you what, man, tell Alan Stone how great this podcast is. Let's help me get him on here.
Okay. I'll work my angle through Trevor and see what kind of magic I can work.
Okay, Grant, I just want to thank you once again for being on the show. I've had a blast talking to you, and I will talk to you soon. Have a great day, okay?
All right, thank you, man. Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, man. Bye.
All right, bye.
And there it was, my conversation with Mr. Grant Emerson of the awesome band Delta Ray. Make sure to check them out. They're going to have some new stuff up very, very soon. With all that money they got from the Kickstarter, they better have some stuff out pretty soon. But thank you guys for coming back week in and week out. It means a lot to me. And we're going to keep rolling next week. Next week on the program, I got to sit down with Mr. Bradley Bell, keyboardist extraordinaire from Chiodos. You guys remember Chiodos? They were massive. They great band, man. I remember Warped Tour 2009. Craig Owens, the singer of Chiodos, actually got up and did an Atari song with us on the main stage. It was a lot of fun. You can probably find that on YouTube if you search it out. Atari's Chiodos, I don't know. But yeah, next week on the program, I get to sit down with Mr. Bradley Bell from Chiodos. So make sure to come back for that. Make sure to check out all my sponsors, Talking Props, the band at the beginning of the show, Merge4.com, Permanence Tattoo Gallery. Become a patron, patreon.com/TOTOT podcast. Leave us a review, subscribe, rate, whatever you want to do. It helps us gain visibility on all of the platforms for all of the podcasts. And we want to take over the world with this podcast. So thank you guys very much. I appreciate the support. Please listen to another episode. We've got 69 other episodes. So I'm going to get out of here. I feel horrible. And I'm going to play some music. This song is called If I Loved You. It's by Delta Ray. This is the song that Mr. Lindsey Buckingham of Fleetwood Mac actually played on. We talked about it in the podcast. So you guys, I will see you next week. This is Chris signing off. And here it is, If I Loved You by Delta Ray. Chris out.
If I loved you, life would be easy. There'd be no truth that I'd be scared of. I could walk through every valley, and you light me with all of your love. But I don't. Just would make you the light of my world. I wouldn't wait, love. I'd marry you tomorrow and we'd make love. And I'd be a girl. But I don't know.
You have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're gonna be like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.